Okay, it is 6:30. We will go ahead and get started. Welcome to Planning Commission tonight. Thank you for being here. We will start with the pledge with Commissioner Tucker leading us. Thank you, Commissioner Tucker. We will move into the public comments. If there's any public comment that does not pertain to any of the agenda items, now would be the time to come and address those. Seeing that there are none, we will move to agenda item number 3, consideration of a site plan amendment approval for the Collective Campus at 1375 West Center Street. Richard Wright is the applicant, and is he here? Thank you for being here. And Mackenzie.
Okay, so the Collective Campus, as we're calling it, is coming into the property that was once Legacy Preparatory Academy. They have relocated to a new facility in Woods Cross, which staff supports because they will no longer be across from the sewer treatment facility. Not the best place for a school. So the Collective Campus consists of 4 different businesses, all owned by the single entity. The Green Collective. It includes 2 general contracting firms, a pool contractor, and a snowboard company. The snowboard company isn't doing any manufacturing at this location. It will be more of very small warehousing and office practices, a place for them to have headquarters. So the address is located in the manufacturing distribution zone, where all of those business types and uses are permitted, including outdoor storage and general contracting. Sherry, can you click on the PowerPoint so I can, oh, there we go. Here's an aerial image of what the property looks like right now. The applicant has applied to basically remodel the entire parking layout. The bus lane doesn't exactly make sense or the best use of the property for them. So what they have requested is to increase the parking count so that it fits what they are required to have. We calculate them with the requirement of having 105 parking stalls based on the uses and the space within the structure. And they have provided 101 parking stalls, which staff and the DRC and Community Development Director all feel that is adequate for this type of use, and we are recommending approval at that amount. Now, with driveways existing, there's a driveway down on 1200 West and a driveway up on Center Street. They have asked to put a new driveway in on Jordan River Drive, which is to the west side of the property. That will access additional parking for shop and mechanic personnel, and then also their outdoor storage area. They are requesting to put a new drive approach off of Center Street, which will be used to access their new mechanic shop that they're putting into the old gymnasium. They're just retrofitting that to make better use of that area. And then they are going to be adding a new drive or expanding a drive approach on 1200 West from about 25 feet to 40 feet, just so they can have better access to their outdoor storage yard. The city engineer has reviewed the placement and size of all of these drive approaches and deems it sufficient for our code and what's required as far as distance from intersections and the widths of the driveways. The outdoor storage area will be screened from view on 1200 West with a masonry wall. And then there will be a chain link fence with a chain link gate on either side of the outdoor storage area on 1200 and on Jordan River Drive. They are in compliance with city code as far as setbacks from the road with the fence. And then also we've requested that they meet the code regarding barbed wire on top of the fence, which is that they can have it if it's tightly strung and there's only 3 strands. As far as landscaping goes, because that's on everyone's mind right now, they have provided a total of 37% landscaping 19% landscaping. Let me get to the thing. Of that 19%, approximately 12,264 square feet, which equals approximately 37% of the area, is going to be sod or turf. And a lot of that, as you can see on the site plan, is actually just a detention basin. The rest of the area will be xeriscaped, and they meet our code for street trees, our selected species that we have passed in code. And also, as far as parking islands and trees in those, landscaping, all of that goes, they're also compliant. They are adding a new sidewalk to Center Street, which has never been there before, and it's just a new connection that we've been wanting for a long time, and really improving the site altogether. As far as the building itself goes, there's only a small renovation that will happen to the front of the building facing Center Street. Why is this not working today? Oh gosh, it keeps throwing me off. Okay, there we go. So here's a picture of what's existing as of Google Earth. And then the top picture is what they have proposed. They are wanting to add about a 200 square foot vestibule onto the front of the structure. And then the majority of the other changes are just exterior facade remodels that are making the building look more pleasant. And okay, and then here's the elevations of what they're wanting to do. Everything as far as architectural review meets the standards, and the DRC is recommending approval of the site plan amendment with the conditions that they complete any engineering red lines and they provide South Davis Metro Fire an access to the gated outdoor storage area and parking on the south side of the property.
Great, thank you. Mr. Wright, did you want to add anything at this time?
No.
Okay, great. Any questions for Mackenzie from the commission or staff?
Hi, this is Commissioner Moss. Just one, so is the only thing that's not in compliance currently just the required parking stalls?
Yeah, okay. Everything else they brought into compliance with awesome. Our code right now.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, they could make more room for additional parking spaces. There's a whole bunch of storage area in the back. It's just it isn't really necessary. And so we didn't want to have to stripe more spaces and put in more parking islands just to meet a number that really isn't necessary for their business model.
So on a slightly unrelated note, is there any further developments with Salt Lake City on 2200 West dumping traffic onto Center Street?
We will not be annexing that area out on 2200 West. So I know that right now I received a notice from Salt Lake, well, actually from the developer, for the property owner, that of his intent to file an annexation petition with the city of Salt Lake, with Salt Lake City. So they're working on an annexation to Salt Lake City proper.
Yeah, I think my question more went to the, you know, the road, the truck traffic and some of that that's coming here, the bridge restrictions and all that.
Yeah, they haven't asked us anything about that, and we haven't communicated.
Mr. Wright, can I ask you a question if you could come to the microphone? We have a commissioner that's joining us virtually as well as our meeting sure. minute secretary. If you could just state your name, that'd be great.
Richard Wright.
The employees that come, it's approximately 75, and are they coming and going throughout the day, or is it like an 8-to-5 kind of structure? What do you anticipate as far as coming and going with those 75 employees, roughly?
Well, Morgan might be able to answer that better, but I assume they'll be coming shortly before 8 and throughout the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of transition there?
No, there wouldn't be a lot of coming and going. It would be...
Okay, any other questions that any of the commissioners wanted to ask? Mr. Wright? The building looks great. We're glad to have you here and have the improvements to the property and the sidewalk and the investment that you've put into the property there. So thank you for doing that. If there's no other questions or comments, we can move to a motion.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I make a motion that the Planning Commission approve the site plan amendments for the collective campus located at 1375 West Center Street with the following two conditions. One, completion of engineering red lines, and two, provide South Davis Metro Fire with access to the gated outdoor storage areas and parking on the south side of the property.
Great, thank you. And do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. That's Commissioner Ward. And any comment on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? And the motion carries. Thank you. Best of luck to you. Thank you for being here. And we will move on to agenda item number 4, work session, Town Center Form-Based Code Draft Chapter 5. Is this you, Sherry, or?
It's Allie.
Oh, it's Allie.
It would be me. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, there you go. We just saw you turn on the screen there.
Okay, awesome. Okay, if you can move to the next slide, we'll just dive right in. Let's do this. So I'm just going to kind of briefly go over all these general requirements that are at the beginning of the section. There are, of course, it talks about the sub-districts and the uses, which we've already talked about with other chapters. It talks about like principal structures and accessory structures. And then it goes on to talk about some general design requirements. One of those is the front property line coverage. And that's just basically a percentage of the front property line that is covered by buildings. So there in the tables that you'll see later on, there are certain percentages of that front property line that need to be covered with the structure. Then it talks about setbacks, and this is a little different than it is in the rest of our code, where we have a minimum and a maximum front yard setback and corner setbacks. So that kind of introduces that topic. We have maximum impervious coverage, and this section, I think we need to revisit some of these percentages as we've been writing our landscaping code and updating that information. I think we need to probably revisit some of those numbers, so don't get too hung up on those numbers right now. Then it moves on to vehicular access, and it has access prioritized. So if there's an alleyway, that's the primary access that they want to see, that we want to see. And then it goes to non-primary streets. So the primary streets would be like 89, Highway 89 and Center Street. So we're trying to limit access from those roads if there is access available from another road. And of course, any access from Highway 89 will have to conform with the UDOT access plan. Then it talks about the height, and instead of doing a footage, you know, the number of feet that it would be, it's measured in stories in this section of the code. And it addresses the building height and elevation change, which is when a building is on a slope. So like all these buildings that come up Center Street, they kind of have to step up. And so it gives a way for you to measure that so that the buildings, because no building is going to be on a perfect slope. It's going to kind of do stairs. It's going to step up. And so it gives you a way to measure that so that we can make sure that there's nothing weird going on with people's building heights on that hill. Then it moves on to talk about single family home transitions. This is most important in the Edge District and near the Edge District, in the Edge District and near the single family homes, where there's a transition to those single family residential neighborhoods. So there's kind of a graduated setback from those shared property lines, whether that be their rear or side property line from the single family home. And so that it steps it up so that it's not a huge blank wall right next to a single family home. We don't want like four story buildings right next to single family homes. So this gives it the ability to kind of step up as you move closer to like Highway 89, for example. Then it moves on to talk about story heights, street facade requirements. Those are pretty self-explanatory. And then it moves to transparency requirements, which is also located in the table later on. on some building types, the ground floor transparency is higher than the upper floors. And that's to promote kind of a pedestrian feel. You're wanting to make it more inviting for people to shop there, for example. And so there's the transparency percentage is just, I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory too, but the amount of window space that is on a wall. Then it moves on to facade divisions. And Sherry and I repeatedly get confused about which is which on these facade divisions, but there's horizontal and vertical facade divisions. And that's just to break up the building so that it's more interesting and it's not just like a concrete tilt-up building, but you have like something breaking up that building. It talks about entrance requirements. So there are different entrances that are allowed or are not allowed with different building types. And the same thing with roofs. There are some roof types that are not allowed in the town center. We also require variation in the roof line, and that's the same reasoning that the facade divisions have, is just creating interest. And let's see, it talks about towers. That's not as big of a deal. And then it moves on to materials and color. And it regulates that the 80% of each facade would be constructed of primary materials. And then you have accent materials. And then it lists the type of materials that would be allowed. And we're really going for higher quality buildings in our town center that are going to last, that aren't going to age really quickly. We're not regulating the color, but we are requiring that there are like accent colors. But we aren't regulating what that color is. We don't have a palette. Then it talks about windows, awnings, shutters, balconies. And as you guys have read through, I'm sure there's different regulations for each of those sections. And then I wanted to touch on the end of the chapter. I'm going to jump to the end and then come back. So there's an adaptive reuse section at the end of the chapter. And I'm just going to be upfront and tell you that it needs some work. The intent is to allow some of the bones of some of these buildings that are already in the town center to be reused. And so to add on to some of the buildings or to remodel them. I think most of them would probably need vertical addition. They need some more height. But for example, we got a grant to help redo the facade of the Neighbor's Market building across the street where JJ Donuts and Nacho House is. And we tried to make it as close as we could to this code without having to like add another story onto the building. And so they added some interest on the roof line, and they changed the materials on the facade and things like that. So that's kind of what we're talking about with this adaptive reuse. But this section does need some more meat to it as to how we determine which things can be waived and which cannot from this code as we're doing the adaptive reuse, and how that process will play out. Okay, if we can move to the next slide. Uh-oh. The images are not showing up. That's a bad sign. Can you like go forward and back and see if they show up again? Oh. That's not ideal. Okay. Okay. So these are all the building types that are addressed in this section of the code. There's a storefront building, which as you can see, that has a higher transparency requirement on the ground floor, just as I was mentioning. Stacked flats, it's basically apartment units. There's two different type of row buildings that are shown here. There's one with a pitched roof and one with a flat roof. I think you've seen a lot of that flat roof type lately in our town center. Limited bay buildings are interesting to me. They and these would be great buildings for adaptive reuse. They're buildings that have like a bay door on them. But I don't know if you've seen buildings like this. I know there's some in Salt Lake that they'll open up that bay door and there's a coffee shop or there's a little small grocery store or something inside there. And it's a particular interest to have these buildings in like the parks and arts. I'm sorry, not the arts and park district. I think it's allowed in some of the districts on Highway 89 as well. And then yard buildings are just basically apartment buildings that have kind of a courtyard in the center. Okay, we can go to the next one. So the way I'm going to approach this is I'm going to go by sub-district, and then we'll talk about which building types are allowed in each sub-district. So we'll start with the core. In the core sub-district, if we can go to the next slide, please. There are four building types that are allowed. You're going to have to click again until these, I don't know why these images are coming up that way. Okay. So storefront, stacked flats, limited bay, and row buildings are allowed in the town, in the core of the town center, with a few exceptions. Row buildings are not permitted fronting US 89 in the core. So this city center project that's across the street, the commercial building on the corner is in compliance, but the row buildings would not be allowed in the core, fronting 89. They would be allowed fronting Center Street or Main Street, or any of those other buildings or any of those other streets that are in the core. Limited bay buildings would not be permitted within 200 feet of Center Street and US 89 intersection or 350 North and US 89 intersection, which that 350 North is not really applicable to the core, so that probably shouldn't be in there. And then residential would be allowed only in upper stories on the buildings that are fronting US 89 or Center Street. So it goes, I picked out some of the most important parts, I felt, of the table, but you have the full table in front of you. I think what we're trying to show here is that the maximum height is the tallest buildings are going to be here in the core. And we have a pretty high minimum height as well. We want the intensity and the density to be in the core. The setbacks are very small as well. We're wanting the buildings tall and close to the street, so that, or close to the pedestrian realm, I should say, so that it can do several things. It creates interest in the town center for pedestrians. When the building's right up there, right against the sidewalk and pedestrian realm, they're more likely to stop in at a shop or something like that. And it also will hopefully slow traffic down on Highway 89. And then you can see the ground floor transparency requirements are pretty high in the core and on that storefront building. Okay, we can go to the next one. Here are some examples of buildings that might be located in the core. The one on the bottom is a rendering of that city center project across the street from City Hall. You can go to the next. Now we'll move on to the Arts and Park subdistrict. So this is the area surrounding Hatch Park and west of City Hall. And let's move to the next one and get those buildings up there. Thank you. So this one has, there are more buildings that are allowed here. I think the addition of the Civic Building is what's on this one. And the height you can see is lower, much lower in this area. We're near a single family residential neighborhood, and we're also right in the middle of a bunch of multifamily residential. So the height is lower, but still pretty high with 3.5 stories. The setbacks are smaller here as well. and the ground floor transparency is a little bit lower than it is in the core. We can go to the next for some examples of what might be in the Arts and Park. So we thought that like a kind of modern but touching on historical is sort of what we're going for in the Arts and Parks subdistrict. Go to the next. Center and Orchard is the area east of the core and east of the Town Plaza development. And there's also Orchard Elementary in that area. Go to the next. So this one allows the same ones that are allowed in the Arts and Park District. Again, the height is a little lower because we're getting closer to some single family neighborhoods. Although in this case, the single family neighborhoods are up higher in elevation than this sub-district. So it's not as big of an issue as far as setting back from single family homes because they're sitting up higher. Setbacks are low. We'll still have that same cross section for the sidewalk and trees and tree grates and things like that in this sub-district. I think that cross section is only in Center and Orchard and the core sub-district as far as having the raised planter beds, trees and tree grates, and that really wide sidewalk area. And then row buildings, row buildings are not permitted fronting US 89, but that there's no 89 frontage in Center and Orchard. Sorry, I put that on there. So click one more time and we'll look at some examples of buildings that could be in this district, sub-district. So that top left is kind of an example of what the pedestrian realm will look like, or you can look across the street and see what that's going to look like all the way up Center Street. And we're hoping for... we really hope for some restaurants or boutiques or things like that in this sub-district, and we could put some tables out in that pedestrian realm and really create some interest there. Let's move to the next sub-district, which is the Boulevard. The Boulevard on the east side is already pretty much planned, and I think there is a development agreement for Williamsburg, but there are some pieces of property north of Eagle Ridge Drive that still have the potential to redevelop. So those are really the ones that we're geared towards here. Or if any of the buildings not Village Station, but just north of it, Eaglewood Lofts, if any of those wanted to redevelop as well at some point. Then we would address it with this code. Go ahead to the next one. So this allows all the same ones that were allowed in Arts and Park and Center and Orchard. The building height gets larger here. There's definitely not an issue with the single family neighborhoods being nearby because they're way up on the hill. So we can really get some height intensity here and as you lead into the core. The front setbacks are a little larger. We don't expect that there will be as much of a pedestrian presence here in the south part of the town center. And the ground floor transparency is a little bit lower because of that, for that same reason. Go to the next. So there's some examples of what might be there, or you can look at Village Station approvals. It's kind of the same things. And let's go to the next sub-district. North 89. So this is north of the core, and it's very close to, this one is the one that's very close to single family neighborhoods on both sides of Highway 89. Go to the next one. So this one allows for all the building types. And the building height is lower. 3.5 stories is the maximum height. Oh, 4 stories for a civic building. 3.5 stories for storefront, stacked flats, limited bay. The front setbacks are a little higher as well. We expect the pedestrians to mostly stay in the core, but there could be some that are heading north or south. but we want the intensity of it to stay mostly in that core. And this is really similar to the Boulevard sub-district in that the ground floor transparency is lower, the setbacks are a little higher. But the setbacks are still, the buildings will be closer to the street than they are if they were approved under our current code. Yard buildings would not be permitted fronting US 89, but they could be in some of those deep lots. They could be towards the back of the lot. Or on 350 North. Limited bay, row, and yard buildings would not be permitted within 200 feet of 350 North and US 89 intersection. And let's go to the next one to look at some examples of that.
Hey, this is Commissioner Stone. I have a quick question about what is the definition of like half a story? What is the use of that? Is it like lofted ceilings? Is it like?
I think it defines it earlier on, if I can find it here.
I believe it's the basement. So if you have a basement that is half exposed.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
Kind of like that photo on the right, on the bottom right. Is that an example?
Yes. Sorry, I'm just trying to find it for the definition. Of course, it's difficult to find when I'm on the spot. I'll look for it when I finish this. Or Sherry can look for it while I'm talking.
Okay, Commissioner, I thought it... And I don't have the definition in front of me either, but I thought it was pertaining to the main floor where the storefronts typically might have, you know, 10, 12, 15 foot ceilings versus the stories above.
Well, Brianna just pointed out the picture on the bottom right. Like the basement, like having half of it above ground. Is that?
I found the.
Oh, okay.
I found the section. So it's under the maximum overall height section. It says half stories are located either completely within the roof structure with street facing windows or in a visible basement exposed to maximum of one half story above grade.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and then the next slide, I think we're on our last sub-district, the Edge. So I've talked about the Edge sub-district in a previous meeting where it is meant to be a buffer between the town center and the existing single-family residential neighborhoods. Let's move to the next one to look at what's allowed there. So row buildings, yard buildings, and civic buildings are all that would be allowed there. It does, in the use section, allow for some small retail, so maybe a little corner store or something like that, but it would have to be located in one of these type of buildings. The height is lower. Three stories is the maximum, and the setbacks are higher to make it more compatible with existing setbacks and height limitations in the single-family residential area. And the transparency requirements are very low as well. I think there's one more slide that shows some examples of edge buildings. Yes. So there's some examples of some like small scale retail that might be located within the edge, and also just, you know, regular single family homes or townhome type products. So I think that's all I've got. And then I just wanted to open it up for whatever questions you might have and see if I can answer them. I know it's kind of a bear. This section is difficult to get through, but this is the meat of the entire form-based code. So hit me with your questions.
Yeah, thanks, Allie. Yeah, great work. Can you just explain briefly, and I wasn't able to go back and look at the definition, but can you go back and just explain the measuring front property line coverage and then just kind of how that those get set for each of the different types?
Sure. So there is a figure. I don't have it up here. Nope, I don't have it there, but it is on page 3 of your code that you have in front of you, hopefully. It shows figure 5.2 shows the width of the principal building and the width of the front property line. And so you take the width of the building, you divide it by the width of the property line, and that gives you your front property line coverage. So we have percentage requirements because we don't want big open spaces between the buildings. We want this all to be close together and more intense than the rest of the city. So areas that aren't covered by buildings, it says, should be courtyards, plazas, or other landscaping features. And there is the ability for some side yard parking in certain situations, and it lays that out. What other questions did you have about that?
So when you view that number, that's a minimum, right?
Yes.
Is it defined that way in the definition section, that's a minimum number? Because as I read this section, it makes sense what you said, but someone could misconstrue that, I think. I don't know.
Yes.
Anyway. I just could not find my definitions or I would answer my own question.
Sure. I see front property line, and coverage is the percentage of the front property line occupied by the width of the building. So it does not specify maximum or minimum, I'm sorry. Let me look in the table.
So one suggestion would be maybe in the table, just put minimum in parentheticals or something like that.
Yes, that's a great suggestion. Thank you for noticing that.
Any other questions or comments or feedback?
So this is Commissioner Jorgensen at the interest of backing the car way up. So where did this particular one come from? And, you know, is there photos or we've seen some photos here of the look and feel, but it's very prescriptive. So, you know, it's 10 foot here and 15 foot max there. And I mean, there's just a lot of prescriptive parameters. Is this time tested? These are great examples. Where did this come from, and why should we have confidence in, you know, why any particular prescription is the right one for that? Because, I mean, it sounds good. I kind of get the feel of it. I like it, but the devil's in the details, you know. So can you give us a little bit of sense of why we should have confidence in some of those very, very detailed prescriptions?
So the go ahead, Allie.
Oh, I was just going to say that this whole project started, and I don't know if I mentioned this in the previous meeting when I introduced this code, but we got a grant from Wasatch Front Regional Council to write a form-based code. We worked with them. They had a template form-based code that had been formulated, I think, by them, but they had looked at a lot of other different form-based codes and all the best practices to create this template for communities to use. So we worked with them over several years to get all these, tweak all these numbers and get all these numbers right and make examples of sites that would comply, buildings that would comply, to see what they would look like. So that's just kind of some background about how this code was formulated, but I think Sherry has something to add as well, and I'll let her go.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it is a model ordinance, and as I was going through and putting this into our code format, I found very similar ordinances from all around the country, including Billings, Montana, which was very, very similar, in fact, almost identical. But those numbers then, we took the original numbers, and we had the previous planning commission. We went through and went back and forth on these numbers. And so there's still room for discussion if you guys want to talk about those and decide if they are right or if they're wrong. We can certainly have that conversation again. This is just the output of what we had done before. Now, I did have some notes in my copy of the form-based code as I was moving everything into this new format, and one of my notes was check the setbacks, because I think it was our Commissioner Arson who said, I think that was her note, that they might not have matched what we had discussed as a planning commission before. And so I was kind of hoping for a little bit of feedback, because I couldn't find anything that that told me where I was supposed to change them into something else. So I think those are still up for discussion and decision by the planning commission on what the exact number should be.
Did that help, Ron?
Yeah, it does. Just one related question. Has this been kind of vetted with any of the developers that likely would be interested in putting stuff in here? In other words, when they get a look at this for the first time, presumably some of them have seen it before, because I'm sure you borrowed it as you did agreements for some of the development that's here now. But anyway, will any of this come as a shock to anybody? Like, well, we don't like this, we don't like that?
I have given it to Brighton, and they never provided me back with any comments. So they seem to understand it. I don't think they had any heartburn on it, but I still think they're waiting for it to actually come to a public hearing before they make any comments, and that they may just have been busy and not gotten to it. So, and then we put it on the back burner for a little while. So, but I'm certainly happy to forward it to other developers to see if, and ask them again if they have any feedback for us.
I think we'll probably invite them to the workshop that we'll end up doing as well.
Oh, yes.
I appreciate the work that you guys are doing in the adapted reuse part that feels like it's collaborative with the business owners that have been here for a long time, that as they want to sell or reuse or reface their buildings, that it feels like we aren't just throwing it all out and trying to find ways to still elevate the core and elevate the center here without huge burdens on the owners of some of those older buildings that are going to need to facelift. So that, I appreciate you guys adding that. Any other comments or questions? Or specific input that the staff is looking for that we could be helpful with?
I just wanted to mention one more thing too, where you were, I can't remember which commissioner was asking this, but why should we feel confident in this, these numbers? And I think we have done our research, and we have done our due diligence by putting it out to developers, things like that, but and also laying it out on site plans. But I think part of this too is we won't really know till we start using it. And so I think we just need to dive in and start using it, and then we may have to, I'm sure we're going to have to make some tweaks to this code as we go along.
Yeah, and I feel like tracking the whole process, for those of us that have been here since it started, I feel like the amount of time that has already gone into it has really fleshed out some of those things that were problematic, that even just the COVID pause allowed this to become so much cleaner and more succinct and helpful for the staff and applicants. So I think that over the time, it really has become a better document as we've looked at it. And probably once it gets put into use, some of those things will come up, and at that time, we can amend it as needed. And
one of the thoughts that it just occurred to me, I just remembered from 2 years ago, that we had talked about doing was actually taking some of the parcels that are in the town center and having someone lay it out like a site plan with these setbacks. So perhaps the Usinian property, so basically between 350 north, south of the post office, down to where past that car dealership, that little new car dealership, and then there's a dance studio building. next to Ponds, north of Ponds, and kind of seeing how we would lay out, how somebody would lay out buildings on that and how they would feel and look. And so I think that's something that we probably need to revisit so that when we go to the open house, we can say, okay, this is how it would apply to these particular parcels. And then you can get a better feel of what that setback feels like, and as well as us as staff, because it's hard for us, and we're the experts who do this all the time, sometimes to vision what that setback will look like and what that will feel like. I know when we worked on City Center across the street, we went back and forth as we were negotiating the P district of how far back the building should be set from the corner. How much plaza should we have? Is it enough? You know, with all the different things that have to go in there, like the street light poles and the signal light poles and all of that. When they were actually building it, we almost lost that plaza on the corner, which isn't a very big plaza, because Rocky Mountain Power, they ruin everything. I'm not kidding. They wanted to put those big green boxes right on the corner. And if the developer had not been paying attention to them when they were scheduling and when they showed up to put do the job, the guys on the ground were going to put it right there, because on the site plan that they look at, they're like, well, there's an open space right there. Let's just put it right there. And as you leave tonight, you can look across the street and you can see that they had them move those boxes down. It's right next to the entrance, straight across from our entrance, and you can see the big green boxes. And imagine those big green boxes right on the corner of Center and Highway 89. So even then, we were like, we had a vision for two additional seating planters on that corner, and when they put them in, it didn't work. It was too tight of a space. And so we're learning as we go along. But I feel like that it will be a really good exercise for us to go over and say, okay, this is what that measurement feels like. Is this really the feeling that we want? And I would encourage you to take a walk through the newer developments and see what you feel about the setbacks. How do you feel in the space? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel like it would be more comfortable if there were 5 or 10 more feet? And just try to imagine the rest of the town center building out with these standards and how you might feel about them. So that's what I would encourage you to do as we continue in this process.
Thanks, Sherry. Any other comments?
So, again, just being sensitive to lower income people, you know, and this is kind of the gentrification concern and so forth. But people who have single family residences and then maybe always lived here and they want to continue to live here, how do we feel about that? I think in the prior meeting we said there was very few of those, including even in the Edge district. But again, the applicability for this would be anything beyond normal regular maintenance. I'm just a little concerned about that. Can we think about that a little bit further and just make sure that we're not creating any undue burden on anybody who wants to stay here?
I thank you for that comment. I'm very concerned about that as well. I grew up in the neighborhood on Main Street, so I know everybody there. That's the entire purpose of the Edge District, is to try to protect those homeowners, and so that they understand that the intent of the town center is not to doze their neighborhood. That's not it at all. It is to focus that intensity up on the Highway 89 and Center Street area. And we want to protect those single family homeowners from the intensity of the development up there with the creation of the Edge District.
And also, I'll just add, when we started this whole process, there were a lot of rumors flying around in the Main Street neighborhood that we were, in fact, going to look at an ordinance that would just make it easy for somebody to come in and buy all their homes and wipe them out, which is why we came up with the Edge District in the first place, was to show that there was this transitional area between the existing single family where you might be able to do a little bit more, but also that it basically said, look, this is the edge of it, and we are going to hold our line and make these dwellings can stay. And then we're going to step up to, you know, duplexers or townhomes and be very sensitive to the heights as we went forward in that. And it was also just to show them that, look, even in your Edge District, we're not proposing radical changes that are going to out you of your own neighborhood. We were trying to be very sensitive to that. And we will continue to do that. And I appreciate any feedback on that.
And I think the only exception is on the north side of 150 North, where it is slated for a little more intensity, but that intensity is like townhomes. So it's really still compatible with the single family area, but it is in that arts and parks district, which is a little more intense than the edge.
And so some of the concern over that was that we were going to have those edge districts just full of teardowns and putting up townhomes, and where we limited only to that that parks and arcs in the north side of 150 district, that really alleviated a lot of concern out there in the neighborhood, because those houses are pretty run down. They will be across from a new park, and they can kind of catch that vision when you look at the new 8 townhomes that went in on the corner of 150 and Main, that would be the vision for that street, and then everything else just transitions in and stays in a single family neighborhood and supports the town center just as if the new residents do.
And as far as the Edge District goes, if you owned a single family home in the Edge District, this wouldn't impact you at all unless you tried to redevelop your own land with a duplex or whatever, right?
Correct.
So the families that currently live there won't be impacted at all unless they try and
unless they want to do something
on their own lot.
Yeah. And in fact, it should actually make it a little bit easier for them to do more. The setbacks are a little bit different. They're a little bit less, so they can do some additions and whatnot. But mm-hmm. it doesn't change the character of their neighborhood. That was what was most important to us, is that we allow people to maintain that character.
And there's no demands on them as far as what their homes look like or anything like that. So it really shouldn't impact any single family homes inside the Edge District unless they are trying to up density.
Yeah, unless it's a property owner that wants to do it themselves, yeah.
Right.
Duplexes also are already allowed in that zone. And there are plenty of duplexes in that neighborhood west of 89, the Main Street area. And also, I would argue that the improvement of the town center and all the trails and everything that we plan to do would raise their property values.
And we hope it raises their quality of life, too, by adding the trails and, by adding the new streetlights on Main Street and Center Street, that they'll be better. Like, one of the complaints that we saw when we did the survey in the Main Street neighborhood was that the streets are very dark and they don't feel safe walking around at night. And so we kind of thought, well, if we can add these decorative street poles on Main Street and really enhance the neighborhood and show them that we're giving something back to them too, that we have plans to enhance their neighborhoods but not change their neighborhoods dramatically. We will hope to enhance them for the better. That's our goal.
Going back, this is Commissioner Moss, going back to that little, I know there was another chapter that like defined what would trigger like the type of the intensity of change for a single family unit that would trigger the need to come into compliance with this code. Do you remember what that is officially, just for reference? I can't remember what chapter it was in.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but we can certainly look for it. Oh, Ron remembers.
That's the language I'm struggling a little bit with, because it seems to be like a pretty low threshold the way it's written.
Which one was that one?
Regular maintenance.
Which chapter?
What does that mean? So if you upgrade to energy efficient windows, does that trigger? Do you put shutters on your building? I think there needs to be a reasonable accommodation for, you know, maintaining that property and that historic use. As long as it's a non-rental single family residential use, not have the same kind of latitude they have today, without somehow somebody interpreting that language to trip them into, oh no, you know, because again, that's when you're starting to force people out of the area. That is gentrification.
Which section were
you
looking
at? Think that one says, sorry, can I borrow that?
Just tell me the number so I can pull it.
It's just page one of the section of the chapter that we just got. It just says existing structures shall be required to comply when renovations exceed that of normal regular maintenance. So yeah, I guess maybe defining that a little bit further might help in terms of allowing a little more flexibility for the existing homeowners.
In chapter five?
Under general requirements.
Yeah.
In the paragraph under general requirements, letter B.
And I could definitely be misremembering, but I feel like there was a little bit more specific definition earlier on that would, what specifically triggered each type of development to come into compliance with this, but I
I think it was when, I think it, Sherry, we were talking about it. You were showing us some of the buildings on 89 that would need to come into compliance. And I think it was a percentage of the square footage that was being renovated. Because I do remember this conversation too, but I don't remember what it was pertaining to. But I think it was, we were talking about some of the little strip malls. And then Sherry was telling us, oh, if one new tenant renovated, it would have to be a certain percentage of the whole, the entirety of the building before it would trigger, like, you need a whole updo now.
Yes. I think a good demonstration would be to, let's look at a building type in each one of the sub-districts and then look at them individually and say, okay, if somebody came in and asked for a renovation on this particular structure, what would that mean? And then we can provide you a slideshow with that at the next meeting, if that's okay for you, because I really think that's a really great thing to look at, because then when we have the open house, we're going to want to be able to show that. And
yeah,
when we think about these slideshows that we're showing you, these are slideshows that we're going to want to make a presentation to the public on, and those are the exact kind of questions that come up. So I would like very much to delve into that and look at a building in each one of these sub-districts and say, if I were the owner of this building and I came in and wanted to do something and this is what I wanted to do, how would this code be applied to it? And what would they have to do? So I think that's a great suggestion.
I think this section that you guys are remembering is from Chapter 1, which we reviewed last time we reviewed this code. There are requirements about street facade revisions, roof revisions, and then non-conforming site characteristics. And I think that percentage you were referencing was the 10% exception, where a site characteristic is not considered non-conforming if the size of the non-conformance is 10% or less of any requirement of Chapter 25. And then it talks about changing the use and if they abandon the use for 12 months. I think that's geared more towards the commercial buildings, but we probably should look at this with another lens of the single family buildings that are in the Edge District.
Yeah, because if it does affect it negatively or it goes too far beyond what you want us to do, then we definitely need to tweak this language. And so if we could go through that exercise, I think that would be very helpful to know what language we need to tweak.
So just on a related note, my thought would be is just to create some kind of an allowance that makes it more like outside the core district for non-rental single-family residential wanting to make, the typical kinds of modifications and put it in adaptive reuse. Just allow them to do the kinds of things that you could do if you were up the street.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you. That's a good comment, and I think that will be helpful in the public open house to have some of those questions already have been addressed, and some of those homes that are going to be in the Edge District, I'm sure, will come in with some of those fears of the, what does this mean for me moving forward if I want to paint my house or get a new roof or. All right, any other comments or anything else the staff would like us to comment on specifically? No? All right, Allie, are you good? Anything else that we can give to help you or?
No, do you feel like you've had enough review time on this chapter five, on section five?
Yes, I'm hearing yes from Tucker. Does anyone else want to say otherwise? We would be interested in what Sherry was talking about with a property in each district and how it would impact that. That would be great to see.
These tables kind of give me PTSD a little bit, if I'm being honest.
They look so great because of you, though.
Yeah, we spent, didn't we have a 4-hour session just
yes.
on the tables?
Yes. We spent a lot of time on that.
I blocked that out.
You compartmentalized that.
This looks fantastic, Allie.
It looks really good. Okay, any other comments? I do appreciate the problems that this is preemptively solving that we were having with the P districts, where people were feeling like we were being very subjective rather than objective about the projects coming in. And this gives just a really clear guideline for applicants to
know how we're basing the decisions and to not feel like we're picking and choosing people based on what projects we do like and what people we like and what areas we're trying to preserve. And I, that some of those P districts were just, were hard to do because people, we didn't have any rubric to show people this is how we are coming to these decisions when those P districts got so open to interpretation and subjectiveness. So I think this is going to get ahead of a lot of those things that we came up with, and maybe it's going to bring complaints in a different lane, but it is at least solving a problem we were having with the P districts, and we'll see what it brings out if there's anything on the other side.
This is taking me straight to the Orchard and Odell area. Mm-hmm. And that's the one I think about, that, you know, this is going to solve a lot of those problems. We're not trying to force any businesses out like mm-hmm. we were accused of on that one. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to allocate for relocations. And yeah. Frankly, duplexes were allowed on there the whole time. Mm-hmm. This definitely sets the tone a lot clearer, I think, for people, their expectations for applications around them.
Yeah, I appreciate it a lot. All right. If there's no other comments or questions, we can move on. Thank you, Allie, and staff,
thank you
for all of your work on this and all the time you put into it. And then we will move to number 5, report on City Council action items. Did they get the...
No.
The landscaping thing done? We worked for 3 hours?
Yes. And I worked even harder on it to finish up all of the changes for you. So the city manager didn't feel like that he or some of the other departments had taken the opportunity that I had given them, I'm going to put it that way, to read it and understand it and give us feedback. So he pulled it from the agenda. So it'll actually be on the agenda on June 7th. And the city has scheduled a water conservation open house on Saturday, June 4th from 10 to noon, I believe is the hour, 10 a.m. to noon.
That's right.
Is that right? That sounds right. And it's here in this room. Weber Basin Water will be here. We will be here with the copy of the draft code, which I have went through 2 very long and painful Zoom meetings yesterday, explaining all of the different questions that they had and why the ordinance does this or what it does, and getting their revisions for what they wanted. In fact, at a couple points, I was like, okay, you don't understand. I can't just take that back out that they're asking me to as staff. And I'm like, because the Planning Commission specifically made a motion that said, put in that the trees have drip irrigation system when they're planted. And so I'm like, we can put something in there that makes it clear if they're in an existing yard and, you know, maybe they don't need to have it, but, and raise that with the city council, but I can't just take it out because you think it's okay that a homeowner who already has a spray irrigation system is going to put in a tree, and then they'll be discouraged from putting in a tree because they'll have to run a whole new valve and things like that. So it was very painful as I was sitting there going, I'm like, remember this already went through the Planning Commission.
Well, I've seriously stopped watering my park strips. So I need this to go through so I can start my application.
Right. So we hope that when we'll be able to then get some good feedback. One of the comments, I've shared the ordinance with people who have called and asked. We have a resident that's just moved into a new home. They lived in Commissioner Holbrook's neighborhood previously, and they've built a house over on Canyon View, and they just moved in this week. So they haven't put in their landscaping yet, but they've entered into a contract with their landscaper and paid their down payments on their sod, and they're going to put their sod in September because that would be more responsible than to put it in right now and have to water it, except for that if they don't put that sod in the park strip right now before the ordinance is passed, I don't know where they'll stand after. And so that is a question that I need to bring up with the city council and with our city attorney and say, hey, if they got a building permit that was issued based on these ordinances for landscaping, can they still put in sod? And in this particular lot, I feel like I really feel like we're caught in between a rock and a hard place, or a rock and a lawn space. I don't know. Because this particular lot has 337 feet of park strip.
Whoa.
and they want to put sod all the way in it, and they've expended money to put sod
and
sign contracts to do so, but they don't want to put it, they obviously don't want to water it this summer, and they don't want to put it in when we're having a drought, but they do want to put it in. And I don't know what the policy is going to be on that. And that's really a policy question that city council is going to have to answer. How do I enforce this on homes that are already under construction? Because after the adoption, no new park strip should have sod, right? So I'm a little bit unclear as to where we're going to stand and where we're going to draw that line.
It's just a deposit, so that money can go to other materials,
I would think
100% of the project at this point.
They haven't bought the sod. It's not sitting somewhere waiting for it to be put in, right?
I really don't want to see the sod go in in that much of a park strip.
We are not changing this. It's not like in a year from now we're going to have a surplus of water.
It seems, I'm not.
This is the future.
But it was a question that came up today when he called me, and I'm like, I wish I had an answer for you right now. I don't, but I'm going to do some research and talk to the city attorney and see where we might stand on this, and talk to Weber Basin on what their requirements are. Because for us to participate in the program, does that mean drop dead? You got to have, if you're putting sod in your park strip, you better do it before June 7th. I don't know. Yeah. And if it's after that, and then if they do put it in after that, then are we going to go after them with a penalty for, and make them rip it all out? So we really need to just think about those issues.
Well, if it were me, I was in that situation, I'd be looking at two things, that all my neighbors want to tear theirs out. And two, the water rates are going up June 1st.
Right. It's going to be quite different. It's going to be quite punitive. We even talked about that a little bit today in our executive staff meeting about how we can, because we're getting a lot of calls in from people saying, oh, my neighbors are watering, this and overwatering and doing this and that. We don't really have an ordinance that says you may only water once a week. And so when we talked about it today, I said, the mayor has to make a declaration. We need to decide. A lot of the other cities are saying, like, based on your house number is the day of the week that you can water. But one of the ideas that we had was to look back into our Cassell billing software for the water and actually do a comparison. Like when you get your Rocky Mountain Power bill, my favorite company, but they do send you this a three-year example of what you spent on electricity, or how much electricity you used in June of last year and June of the year before, and how much you used in June this year. So we are actually going to go back and do 4 years, and we're going to provide those to the citizens so you can see, hey, in May of 2019, you used X number of gallons. In May of 2020, you used X plus 10,000. Last year, you used X minus 20,000, and this year you're at this number, so that it really puts the numbers back on them. If we get a complaint, we can say, hey, look, we pulled your numbers up for your particular lot, and you're using the same gallons that you used last year, and we're asking you to conserve and really make them aware of how much water they're using and keep that up to date every month. And the other project that we're going to do is an encouragement is say, okay, we're going to have a target each month, and then we're going to report on the city as a whole. How are we doing? Are we saving more money or more gallons of water this year over last year? Because the citizens in North Salt Lake did fantastic last year. We did a great job for the most part. Most people did a great job at conserving water, and we really did save a lot of water last year. And so we'd like to see everybody do a little better this year. So we're hoping that will, spur additional conservation efforts. And one other item to update you on. So something that I did not foresee, as I didn't even think about it, because it's an off election year and an election year that I wouldn't ever have to administer. But on June 28th is the primary election, and therefore we will not be having two planning commission meetings in June. So we will only have one meeting in June, which is a good thing that we left a little cushion in there on this schedule on the form-based code, because we will not have a meeting on June 28th. So I just wanted to make you aware of that.
Can I just make a water conservation observation? I seem to learn everything the hard way. But one of the things when you get your backflow preventer tested once a year, you might want to do is see if your stop and waste valve is leaking. And the easy way to do that is put the handle on it and listen. Make sure that there's no water load inside. But if you can hear water running, that means your valve is likely leaking. It's wasting water. It's coming through your meter. Anyway, that's something that I don't think most people know, but I've got one scheduled to be repaired. I noticed it this year.
We had an interesting suggestion from a citizen, came in and talked to the city manager, and he brought in this device that he had made with a funnel and a tube that he would hang on. He hangs on his shower when he's warming the water up, when he turns the water on to warm, and it fills a bucket, and then he uses the water that was cold, you know, until it gets hot to then flush his toilets. And oh my God, was suggesting that the city should make those for all of the citizens and pass them out. But we obviously don't have the funding or financing to do that. But I thought that was a really unique idea and something great that our citizens are thinking about how to conserve water and how not to just, when you turn on your shower and you wait for the water to warm up, how to save that water and still reuse it for something else. You know, go put it on your rose bushes or go water your house plants with it, those types of things. Or flush your toilet.
Great. Well, thank you. Any other? Nope. Great. Okay, we can move on to the approval of the minutes. Thank you to Andrea for tracking that very complicated meeting and funneling it down to very clean minutes and a very clean motion, and that was probably a lot to filter to. So thank you, Andrea, for the minutes. They looked great. Any comments or corrections on the motion? I mean, on the minutes.
One very minor item, page 7, line 259, it's talking about no lawn in the lawn strips, but it says less than 8 inches, should be less than 8 feet.
Thank you, good catch. Any other corrections for the minutes? And if not, we can do a motion to approve them.
Commissioner Jorgensen, I make the motion that we approve the meeting minutes as drafted for May 10th Planning Commission meeting with the one edit noted.
Great, thank you. And do we have a second?
Second, this is Commissioner Moss.
Thank you, and all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, Ryan. Travel safe. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. We'll see you next time.